I'm VOA's Jeff Custer with this worldwide news update. Palestinian medical workers report at least 20 people were killed in overnight strikes in the Gaza Strip. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
One of the strikes overnight and into Monday hit a tent camp in the Mawazi area, an Israel-declared humanitarian zone, killing 8 people, including 2 children. That's according to the Nasser Hospital in the southern city of Khan Yunis, which received the bodies. The Israeli military says it only strikes militants, accusing them of hiding among civilians. It said late Sunday, but it was targeting a Hamas militant in the humanitarian zone. In addition, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in the central city of Deir al-Bala said 3 bodies arrived after an airstrike on a school-turned shelter in the built-up Nusrat refugee camp. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff said Monday there are indications North Korea is preparing to send more troops and weapons to support Russia's war in Ukraine. VOA's Richard Green reports.
The Joint Chiefs of Staff said the additional weapons being readied include suicide drones. They said North Korea has already sent 240-millimeter rocket launchers and 170-millimeter self-propelled artillery to Russia. Pyongyang has already sent about 12,000 troops to Russia, according to South Korea, the United States, and Ukraine. The Joint Chiefs said Monday that at least 1,100 of the North Koreans have been killed or wounded. Meanwhile, Ukraine's military said Monday it shot down 47 aerial drones that Russian forces launched in attacks overnight, targeting multiple areas of the country. Richard Green, VOA News.
Russia's defense ministry said Monday it destroyed a Ukrainian aerial drone over the Bryansk region along the Russia-Ukraine border. Regional officials said there were no reports of damage or casualties from the Ukrainian attack. This is VOA News. The president of Panama is reacting to a suggestion by President-elect Donald Trump that the U.S. could try to regain control of the Panama Canal. AP correspondent Donna Water reports.
In a speech in Phoenix on Sunday, President-elect Donald Trump suggested that his new administration could try to regain control of the Panama Canal, saying the United States foolishly ceded it and that the U.S. is now paying ridiculous, highly unfair fees to use it. Panamanian President Jose Raul Mulino says the Panama Canal is Panama's. Every square meter of the Panama Canal and its surroundings belongs to Panama and will continue to belong to Panama. The sovereignty and independence of our country are non-negotiable. The United States built the canal in the early 1900s. Washington relinquished control of the waterway during the Jimmy Carter administration. I'm Donna Water.
The man accused of gunning down a U.S. healthcare executive on a New York sidewalk earlier this month is expected to make his first New York court appearance Monday. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Luigi Mangione, the man accused of fatally shooting UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, is expected to be arraigned today in a Manhattan court on state murder and terror charges. That case, brought by the Manhattan DA, will run parallel to his federal case. Mangione was formally charged last week by the DA with multiple counts of murder, including murder as an act of terrorism. His court appearance was preempted by federal prosecutors bringing their own charges that could carry the possibility of the death penalty, while the maximum sentence for Mangione's state charges is life in prison without parole. Julie Walker, New York.
Japanese automakers Nissan and Honda have announced plans to work toward a merger that could catapult them to a top position in an industry in the midst of tectonic shifts as it attempts to transition away from reliance on fossil fuels. VOA's Tommy McNeil reports.
The two companies Monday said they signed an agreement on integrating their businesses. Smaller Nissan Alliance member Mitsubishi Motors agreed to join the talks. News of a possible merger surfaced earlier in the month. Japanese automakers face a strong challenge from their Chinese rivals and Tesla as they make inroads into markets at home and abroad. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
A merger involving Honda, Nissan, and Mitsubishi would result in a behemoth worth more than $50 billion based on the market capitalization of all three automakers. Together, Honda, Nissan, and Mitsubishi would scale up to compete with Toyota Motor Company and with Germany's Volkswagen AG. That wraps up this news update, but the world and the news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com, 24 hours a day. I'm Jeff Custer. This is VOA News.
Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Well, currently the economy of Zimbabwe is bad, and it's just heading backward instead of forward.
That's Elliot Masote, professor of business at Debre University in Ohio, on the state of Zimbabwe's economy. Details coming up. Also, stampedes during three Christmas charity events in Nigeria have killed at least 67 people. And African countries are seeking reform of global institutions such as the UN, World Bank, and the International Monetary Fund. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Mozambique's Constitutional Council has proclaimed the results of the October 9th election following a wave of unprecedented protests that have rocked the African nation. Reporter Charles Manguero, monitoring the situation in Maputo, talked to me just a while ago regarding the announcement.
The Constitutional Council of Mozambique declared Frelimo's presidential candidate, Daniel Francisco Chapo, as the next president of Mozambique after gaining 65.17% of the vote, followed by the opposition candidate, Venancio Mondlane, who is supported by the Party for the Democracy and the Development of Mozambique, Podemo, in second place with 24.19%. The Constitutional Council also confirmed that there were some irregularities seen during the election, the discrepancies in figures, but that does not influence much to the final election results. As we speak, Maputo now is under fire. The youth are burning tires all over the streets. They are not yet with the results. Protests have been going on now with over more than 100 people, which were killed since the initial results were announced. Going forward, Mozambique will see some of its worst electoral crisis in the next week with these results.
So Charles Mondlane claims a separate count shows he won 53% to 36% for Chapo. You think the protests will continue in the main cities, including Maputo?
Yes, the protests will be all over everywhere in the country, because these figures, each party has had its own parallel counts. Some had higher figures, some had lower figures, but all the figures are not adding up. But many Mozambicans were expecting that Venancio Mondlane will be the country's president. Everyone was saying that they voted for Venancio Mondlane, as we saw during all these protests, which took almost 8 weeks in the country.
And Charles, businesses were shut and streets deserted in the capital, Maputo, today, despite the fact that it is the height of the festive season, the Christmas season.
The mood is very tense. After the president of the Constitutional Council delivered the verdict, we could see from the social networks that in many streets in Maputo, the youth are burning tires, they are banging, they are singing, they've been waiting for the results to be announced. Since morning, everyone was in his house this morning, because presidential runner Venancio Mondlane had said last Monday that everyone should sit indoors today and wait until the results are announced. And he said that if the electoral truth is not delivered, Mozambique will go up in flames in protesting against these results.
Any comments or statements after the Constitutional Council proclaimed the final results from opposition leader Venancio Mondlane?
Not only Mondlane, other contesting political parties also are rejecting this result. They are saying that this result does not reflect the will of the population of Mozambique at the ballot box. RENAMO itself and another opposition political party have been mobilizing people, saying that, look, now it's time to fight for the truth. It's not to fight for the country in Mozambique. So let's join us in the fight of the truth, or electoral truth in Mozambique. All political parties, now the four, which are presidential candidates, are now mobilizing their supporters to join the protest as we speak. We have not had any comments from the winning candidate, Daniel Chapo. I think he will be addressing his supporters later this afternoon.
That was VOA reporter Charles Manguero. He talked to me from Mozambique's capital, Maputo. Z- Zimbabwe is teetering on the brink of constitutional crisis with President Emmerson Mnangagwa's alleged pursuit of a third term in office dominating the political landscape. Elliot Masote, professor of business at Devry University in the U.S. state of Ohio, says the push for a third term is not just a constitutional issue, it's also exacerbating existing tensions within the ruling ZANU-PF party. On top of all that, Masote points out, the economy of the country is heading backwards instead of forward.
Well, it's not looking good. You know, the politics in Zimbabwe is really not looking good, with the opposition having been weakened, and that's giving ZANU-PF all the powers to do whatever they want, which is pushing us away from a real democracy, because if the ruling party is interfering with the opposition, weakening the opposition, dividing the opposition, it's kind of like turning into dictatorship. And we can see now, with all the cries, all the push for, you know, ZANU-PF to change the constitution and let President Mnangagwa, rule for the third term, that really nobody ever thought he would do that. Are we getting into, you know, dictatorship or not? Which I believe we are getting into a type of dictatorship if President Mnangagwa is going to be allowed to rule for the, you know, for the third term. And that's not going to be good for Zimbabwe, when it was not good before, you know, before 2025, looking at what is happening on the ground, with all the noise happening on the ground, divisions that are being found within the government itself. We have people who are aligned with the vice president, and we have people who are said to be aligned with President Mnangagwa, and talking about him running for the third term, and the opposition as well being ripped apart. It seems like it's chaos in Zimbabwe, and that's not good for the governance. That's not good for the economy of the country, and that's not good for people of Zimbabwe.
And you are so right, Professor. Mnangagwa publicly denies any intention to exceed his constitutionally mandated two terms. But his home province of Masvingo, they are actively campaigning for his continued leadership until 2030, openly flouting the country's constitutional limits on presidential terms.
Yeah, that's very suspicious of President Mnangagwa to allow people, especially from his province, to keep on saying what he said he doesn't want to do. That makes us believe that really he wants to rule for the third time, which is not good, because he is the president. He has the powers to say, well, I don't want to hear anybody talking about this because I have said over and over again, I don't want it. So simply because he is not talking against those people in public and making those people shut up, it means he needs it. And that's not good for Zimbabwe.
And Professor, as a professor of business and following economies around the globe, what is your take on the current economic situation of Zimbabwe?
Well, currently the economy of Zimbabwe is bad, and it's just heading backwards instead of forward. Looking into the shortage of electricity, where a few days ago the whole country was on blackout. Anytime, I keep on saying that, anytime when electricity is off, the economy is going backwards. If they could quantify that into how much had been lost over the years, over the weeks, over the days, it's just like the Zimbabwean economy is not going anywhere. And there is no solution in sight. Of course, they keep on saying we have new generations like the Wanke plant generation that is new, and yet it's facing problems, you know, within a year or two. So we are not even going anywhere where I see to celebrate. And there's so much corruption that has been made a culture, very difficult to change, to the point where even some government officials have been interviewed by the Voice of America saying corruption in Zimbabwe is difficult to end.
And that's the government admitting that corruption is difficult. And instead of saying it's easy, if you, you know, commit a corrupt activity, we're going to catch you. They seem like they're encouraging people by saying it's difficult to catch. So if it is difficult for the government, who is going to end it? And where are we going to go with the economy? Absolutely nowhere.
Elliot Masote, professor of business at DeVry University, spoke with me from the U.S. state of Ohio. Stampedes during three Christmas charity food events across Nigeria have left at least 67 people dead in the past week, many of them children. Families are struggling during the country's worst cost of living crisis in a generation. The Associated Press reports at least 35 children were killed in southwestern Oyo State on Wednesday. On Saturday, 22 people died in southeastern Anambra State, while 10 died in the capital, Abuja. Analysts say the stampedes are not new in Nigeria and are often caused by lack of adherence to public safety measures. But they say people's desperation to survive is making crowd control more difficult. In 2024, African countries once again pushed for the reform of global institutions such as the United Nations, World Bank, and International Monetary Fund with little progress. African governments say the structure of these organizations does not reflect the continent's growing importance in global affairs and is unfairly weighed towards wealthier countries. Darren Taylor reports.
Priyal Singh of South Africa's Institute for Security Studies says the current international order hasn't delivered the economic and political dividends Africa expected. The international relations expert says Africa's sense is of a world run by a group of older powers who want their priorities to be the world's priorities. Singh says Africa feels sidelined from important decisions, even though it'll soon be home to more than a quarter of the world's population, and its minerals are crucial to global development.
African states look at the international order as something that is inherently unjust. It is structured on a composition of power that is rooted in historical injustices. It's rooted in a system of power that really took shape after the Second World War and does not reflect the realities of today. And as a result, many African states are deeply suspicious of vital global international institutions like the International Criminal Court, the UN system in general, especially the UN Security Council. So I think this...
Sitembile Msomi is a governance expert at the University of Pretoria and says Africa wants two permanent seats on the UN Security Council to strengthen its peacekeeping role.
Africa's position is that they want two permanent seats with all of the advantages, with all of the rights of permanence that exists. So Africa, in principle, opposes the veto because it violates the idea of equal rights of all member states of the UN by privileging some states with this, you know, supercharging their voting rights by giving them the right of veto. But the African position is that for as long as the veto exists, then it should be applied equally to all permanent member states.
The five permanent members of the Security Council are the United States, France, the United Kingdom, Russia, and China. They can each veto actions by the Council, which can include sending UN peacekeepers to conflict zones. In 2022, Russia used its veto to shoot down a draft resolution that sought to condemn its annexations of Ukrainian territory. Msomi says it's unfair that Africa, which holds almost 30% of votes within the UN General Assembly, doesn't have a significant voice in ending conflicts, including its own. Mavis Owusu-Gyamfi, an economist at the African Center for Economic Transformation, says the global financial system must be reformed because it's not working for Africa.
We borrow at much, much higher rates than other countries. For example, African countries go to the capital markets, and in 2021, for 10-year bonds, countries were paying between 5 and 16% coupon rates, compared to, say, 2 to 7% for a similar term bond in Europe. And then a lot of us know that interest rates have been pushed up in the US, in Europe, because they are trying to manage inflation. Those decisions that are being made in Europe and North America are having a huge impact on us. Those decisions, for example, have increased our cost of borrowing to about 500% more of what it would have been if we had, say, borrowed concessional money from the World Bank.
Owusu Giamfi says African nations pay more to borrow because they're considered to be high risk. In 2025, she expects Africa to lobby for the reform of lending institutions such as the International Monetary Fund, so they consider each country's particular circumstances when loans are negotiated. Singh says traditional powers such as the US must help Africa to play a greater economic and political role in global affairs. If they don't, he says, there's a danger of a split in the international order, one that pits the developed world against a global south led by China and Russia. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Yehayes Wuhib, in Washington. Sudan's Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, says it retook control of a key logistical base in North Darfur on Sunday, a day after it was taken by rival forces allied with Sudan's army. The conflict between the paramilitary RSF and the army erupted in April 2023, and some of the fiercest fighting has taken place in North Darfur. This, as the army and allied joint forces, a collection of former rebel groups, battle to maintain a last foothold in the wider Darfur region. Reuters News reports the joint forces and the army say they took control on Saturday of the Al-Zurag base. The RSF has used it during the 20-month-old war as a logistical base to channel supplies from Chad and Libya. The army says dozens of RSF soldiers were killed, vehicles destroyed, and supplies captured. Zambian police say they have arrested two men for allegedly trying to harm the president of Southern African nation using witchcraft. The police said Friday that Mozambican national Justin Mabules Kandundi, 42, and Zambian village chief Leonard Pierre, 43, were arrested in the capital Lusaka. The French news agency AFP reports the suspects are accused of being practicing witch doctors. The police say they were planning to use assorted charms, including a live chameleon, to harm President Hakainde Hichilema. The pair were allegedly hired by the brother of an opposition MP facing trial for robbery, attempted murder, and escaping custody. The police say they are to appear in court soon. The incoming Trump administration inherits efforts by the U.S. space agency NASA to return astronauts to the surface of the moon and is turning to commercial space entrepreneurs to help. VOA's Ken Fabo has more.
At a recent press conference on plans by NASA to return astronauts to the surface of the moon, Administrator Bill Nelson pointed out the U.S. space agency was not the sole partner in the Artemis program.
It's a commercial partnership. It's a international partnership.
More than 50 countries are signatories to the Artemis Accords, which NASA says is a common set of principles to enhance the civil exploration and use of outer space. China, now the main competitor to NASA and its international partners, is not a signatory and plans to land its own crew on the moon by 2030. ESA wants to get there before China, using technology created by commercial space companies to accomplish the goal.
We're going to have SpaceX flying a lander on Artemis 3. Artemis 4 is going to be SpaceX, and Artemis 5 is going to be Blue Origin.
But the next mission is not until 2026, when Artemis 2 will send a crew to orbit but not land on the moon. Astronaut Reid Wiseman is the mission commander.
But we talk about what is success for us, and it is enabling Artemis 3.
NASA wants to land near the lunar South Pole to search for ice and water during Artemis 3, scheduled for 2027. Nelson says SpaceX founder Elon Musk's experience testing rockets and spacecraft could help Artemis.
Take over, Elon, yes, take over.
So could his relationship with President-elect Donald Trump.
I think that the relationship is going to be a benefit to making sure that the funding for NASA is there.
I'm with Elon Musk. I think we should set our sights further away. We should go to Mars.
Charles Camarda is a retired NASA astronaut and engineer.
And we should only use the moon to advance the technologies for going to Mars.
In 2005, Camarda was on the crew of the first space shuttle mission after the 2003 Columbia disaster, when the orbiter broke up as it re-entered Earth's atmosphere. All seven crew members died. He's concerned about problems with the Orion capsule's heat shield during re-entry in the unmanned 2022 Artemis 1 mission. NASA believes it has fixed the issue and plans to use the Orion capsule to transport astronauts to the moon.
Time now for our sports roundup with Mokbil Yabaro, our sports analysts. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thank you for having me, Hayes.
So in the world of football, there were so many exciting games with a bunch of goals in the English Premier League. What were some of the big games?
Hayes, we're going to have to start with the very last game that happened this week in the English Premier League. That was the Tottenham Hotspurs versus Liverpool. So Liverpool is currently at the number one slot. They are at the top of the league, and Tottenham Hotspurs are in number 11. This was a very, very exciting game with a ton of goals. The scoreline ended up 6-3. This was what I would like to call a Mexican boxing match. All offense, no defense, right? Wow. So that was huge. Liverpool continues to stay at the top at the moment. Currently, they are 4 points above Chelsea. Chelsea actually ended up with a 0-0 draw against Everton. And Arsenal was able to beat Crystal Palace the second time this week. They played them in the Carabao Cup in the middle of the week, and they won, and they were able to beat them this Saturday as well, 5-1. So Arsenal currently is only 2 points behind Chelsea in that third place slot.
And Mokbil, you mentioned scoring, staying with the Premier League. African players really have shown up at the top of the goal-scoring sheets. Who are some of the top African goal scorers this year?
Mohamed Salah. Mo Salah is at the top Egyptians' own. He has currently 15 goals this season. He is at the top. He is right above Erling Haaland with 13. Nice to see Mo Salah is in form. But I would say Alexander Isak, who is a Swedish national but is of Eritrean descent. He has 10 goals. He's in the number fourth spot. He is currently tied with Brian Mbeumo from Cameroon as well with 10 for Brentford. Another African, Nicholas Jackson, has 9 goals for Chelsea. And Yohan Wissa from the DR Congo, who plays for Brentford, has 9 goals. So, man, Africa is all over the Premier League top goal scorers.
Impressive list. And lastly, the NBA Emirates Cup was won by the Milwaukee Bucks. Who are their biggest stars, and can they win the NBA Finals as well?
Absolutely. We're keeping it with the theme of Africa today. What I would say is Giannis Antetokounmpo, Nigerian Greek national, is at the top, the biggest star that they have on that team. He really would be the catalyst to see if this team can make it all the way. Currently, they are in the fifth spot in the East, so it's a nice little cushion because up until the 10th spot, you have potential to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals and then the Finals. So we will see Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Mokbil Yabaro, our sports analyst, thank you for your input.
Thank you for having me.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehaya Suhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Pete Hunley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.